You are listening to a podcast from Raritan Valley Community College.
All right. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name's Ashley Gefkinetti. I'm Vice President of Leadership and Service of Phi Theta Kappa. My partner is somewhere around here, and it's Conrad Colon. He's Executive Vice President of Student Government. He's coming there. There he is in the back now. And he's definitely been an exceptional help with this, so I'd definitely like to give a warm thank you to him. And we would like to welcome you to this semester's first Leadership Development Series event. The TD Bank Leadership Development Series provides participants an invaluable opportunity to improve leadership skills, network with professional guest speakers, be inspired, and develop your student engagement transcript. If you did not notice in the back, when you walked in, the posters we have is displays all the information required to fill out your transcript, except your learning outcome, which you will learn here today. It's all in the back by the sign-in sheets. At the end, a special thank you needs to be given to TD Bank, America's most convenient bank. Without their generous funding, this event would not be made possible. In addition, I would like to personally thank Gary Woodring. There he is. There's Ari. I can't see far away. He is a member of the RBC Foundation Board. He introduced my partner and I to Mr. Watson and helped coordinate his participation in the Leadership Development Series. Lastly, I'd like to thank the Office of Student Life, RBCC Foundation, and the student body with help supporting this event. It is my honor and privilege to introduce to you today Ryan Watson, Senior Vice President at Chubb & Son. He has been with Chubb for 29 years, assuming the New Jersey branch manager position in 2012. In addition, he served the Chubb Chairman's Advisory Council from 1999 to 2000 and is a past member of the Minority Development Council. In 1990, he was awarded the Black Achiever in Industry Award by the Harlem branch of the YMCA. Mr. Watson is currently a board member of Junior Achievement of New Jersey. He has been on such an incredible journey, and today we get to experience and be a part of it. Please help me welcome Mr. Ryan Watson.
Thanks, Ashley. You can take the mic off. I will do that in a second. But with an introduction like that, I'm kind of anxious to hear what I have to say myself. That's really pretty stunning, Ashley. And it's quite an honor and a privilege to be here, first and foremost. And it's also an obligation that as you fast forward your life and your work life and your career, and I'll mention this a little bit later and I'll emphasize it several times, but the need to give back is critically important. So this is something I feel really connected to and passionate about, because it's important that we share insights, share our journey, share our stories that you think might help one, two, three people make their journey a little easier. So, a couple of things that are going to be ground rules here, all right? I'm not going to stand behind this podium the entire time. I've got no PowerPoint. I've got no slides. And this is not going to be a lecture, all right? I think you all have parents or people that are, you know, parental images that give you lectures. I want to have a discussion. I want to have an exchange of information with you. I want to have a Q&A. I want you to feel comfortable asking questions, because it's an opportunity for you to pick the brain of someone that's out there. I was once in college. I know it was hard to believe, but I was. And the world inside the college cocoon is exactly that. So to be able to have connective tissue to the outside world and to be able to take advantage of having someone that's willing to share is important. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to give you a little bit of my background, share some what I call sort of interesting experiences as an African-American man going into corporate America. I'll give you what I think might be some advice. You can take it or leave it. And then I think what I intend to do is also give you what I believe, at least from where I stand and sit and occupy, is kind of a formula for success. And then I want to open it up anytime for questions. I'm afraid of anybody that comes in with like four bags and everything. It's like I'm ready to hit the ground here or something. But I will invite questions anytime, okay? So don't feel like you're interrupting me. Okay? So are we clear on the ground rules? This is unscripted. I've got a few notes here, but for the most part, I'm going to speak from my heart and my memory as long as it holds up. All right? But first, let me thank Gary and Ronnie for allowing me this opportunity. It's just, once again, a tremendous opportunity for me that fulfills an obligation I feel I want to live and breathe as often as I can. Okay? And then my objective is to share and reflect and give you the benefit of my journey, and hopefully it resonates with you. So, my background. I come from a family of six kids. All guys, no sisters. And born in the middle part of the U.S., Kansas. Now, I don't have a map to show you where that is, but some of you that are sort of landlocked and have not left New Jersey, that's a long ways from here. And you can certainly kind of keep all the "you're not in Kansas anymore" jokes to yourself, because I've heard them all. But I come from a family that did not have a legacy of college. In fact, I was the first person in my family, and going back generations, that graduated with a business degree. So I didn't have people around me that were in what you would call white-collar jobs, that did not go into jobs in corporate America. So my orientation was a whole lot different. I also didn't come from a family that had a big nest egg sitting off to the side that said, "Hey, Ryan, when you turn 18 years old, wherever you want to go, college-wise, we're ready to pay for it." That was not what I grew up with. It was a couple of two or three things. Okay, you can either get a job, go into the military, or if you're lucky enough to get some kind of an athletic scholarship, then that kind of opens the door to college. And also, if you're smart enough, you might be able to get some kind of support to go to college. But it wasn't an expectation of mine that my parents were going to foot the bill for college. And so it was definitely a different kind of experience for me than what I found when I got to corporate America. A lot of my peers and colleagues, you know, kind of had that hard wire that you graduate high school and you got all these campus visits you're doing, and next thing you know, you make a choice and you get accepted, and away you go. So I didn't have that kind of preordination. But I had an expectation that was set by my parents that there is nothing that I cannot do. And there's no limitation on what I am able to accomplish. There's no person that is better or worse than me. So the grounding was very basic and humbling and level setting. So it gave me the freedom to believe. So to me, that was important. I've been at Chubb for 30 years. I know that's kind of a dated bio, but I'm proud of my 30th year that I just celebrated. I've been all over the country with Chubb. I started in Chicago, worked in Kansas City, worked in Tampa, Detroit, Los Angeles, San Francisco, back to Kansas City, and now in New Jersey. Now, some of you are wondering, is this guy in the Witness Protection Program? That's why I flinch when bags come in and stuff, you know. But no, I'm not in the Witness Protection Program, but I think, you know, the journey that I created for myself by moving around gave me invaluable lessons that I think hopefully you embrace, that to be able to transition, to assimilate, to fit in a wide variety of places is so critically important. Now, there are some places that, you know, are more appealing than others, but the bottom line is you're meeting so many different types of people, environments, expectations, etc. So you're not going to be able to have a journey that kind of gives you sort of a linear path and you stay in a little bitty world. I mean, the world is vast. So to the extent that you can assimilate, transition, connect to people in a variety of circles is so important. I will also tell you that, yes, I did get an athletic scholarship. And no, it wasn't tennis, it wasn't swimming, it was basketball and track. But I never had the intention, nor the expectation that, you know, a college career in athletics was going to lead to a professional career. In fact, I was an art major to begin with, and now I'm in the business world. How does that happen? But I went to college with the notion that I wanted to walk away with a set of skills and competencies that would enable me to get people's attention, meaning can you communicate? Can you relate to people? Can you work collaboratively? Can you work in a team? Can you establish a rapport with people? It wasn't a matter of what is the major, what is the area that you're, you know, bring into the table, but if you can't translate those things that you have as a major into something that's really workable and tangible that can be incorporated into an environment, it's not worth a lot. So, art major, for me it was like, okay, I can do this, but the whole notion of being a starving artist didn't really feel well. And then I thought, okay, well maybe I'll do sort of architecture. All right. That's going to require like another, you know, 2-3 years beyond, you know, the undergraduate. It's like, I have a 4-year athletic scholarship. Do the math, Watson. who's going to pay for the other two, you know? So then it became maybe this business administration thing, you know, kind of a general thing that kind of touches a lot of things. And I really had an interest in the world and how business worked. And so it resonated for me, but it gave me a comfort zone that it wasn't cubbyholing me into anything particular, but it gave me a set of skills to relate, to communicate, to connect to people, and I think it's opened a lot of doors. So pick a major that resonates with you is kind of one of my first bits of advice, but don't be so hung up on, okay, what does this do for me in terms of, you know, getting me the door open? The other pieces outside of what the major is really what matters, and I'll go into that in a little more detail as well. I will also tell you, when I started my career journey in 1977 after graduating from college, you can do the math. Yeah, I'm pretty old, but I'm still able to stand up on my own power. I don't have any sort of, you know, devices, okay? It was interesting. Imagine 1977. African-American man walking into an organization. It wasn't Chubb. I worked for a couple of other companies before Chubb. And so the image of an African-American man in 1977 was pretty limited. Okay? Either entertainment, sports, maybe there's an occasional doctor, lawyer, accountant. But to go into the insurance business, there was no one like me, although there were a lot of people like me. People didn't look like me, but there were a lot of people that shared the same values as me. But imagine, it's somewhat unnerving for me, but I think probably more unnerving for my colleagues that I work with in terms of how do you approach Ryan? What do we say? Do we have to have a certain sort of look or feel to connect to him? No, just speak English. Pretty simple as that. But you do find that the things that we think really separate us, there's probably more that out there that really sort of bind us together. But it was uncomfortable for me and my colleagues when I started the work world. But it was probably more out of the fact I didn't have a background and an orientation on how to maneuver and sort of survive in a corporate environment. It wasn't a matter of, hey, I'm an African-American guy and there's a bunch of white guys that I'm working with. That was probably the least of my concerns because I was raised once again, no better, no worse than anyone else. I can do whatever I desire to do. And it should not get down to, you know, you can't do this because you're an African-American guy. But I think it's really kind of intriguing because today, you fast forward, there's still blips out there. But I can't tell you how many times I get mistaken for the president. Who would have thought? I have no Secret Service. I have no black, you know, sort of like stretch limo outside. Trust me. But it changes the imagery. And the imagery of a black man going into corporate America was intriguing to me. And a lot of it, what I found and discovered was after I left a couple of companies, and I'll share with you some absolute quotes. And these are not from people that work for Chubb, because Gary's here and I don't want to get fired. First company I worked for, and I subsequently left, my manager pulled me off to the side and said, "Hey, Ryan, I didn't have a way of broaching this topic with you, but I think you should know the reason why you were hired." I said, "Oh," his name was Ivars Klavans from Latvia. So he was gruff, but he had a huge heart. But he felt compelled to let me know why I was hired. And he said, "You interviewed with the president of the company for one reason." I thought it was odd because I was a lowly entry-level person interviewing with the president of a large corporation. I was like, why is that happening? He said, "You got hired because the president was surprised that you could put together a sentence and speak English." Yeah, stunning. I could have gone ballistic. But to me, it was one of those wake-up calls that, and it certainly took away some of the naivete, but it didn't take away from the fact that I felt, still at the end of the day, I can do whatever I want. And I'm not going to be able to control individuals that have a limited view of who's good, who's bad, and what they stand for. Another example. Another organization, I'm out doing sales calls, doing my thing, you know, yucking it up with people, connecting and having a good time. I come back to the office and my manager's in his office and he's kind of shaking his head going, "What did you do?" Like, "I don't know. I went in and did my thing, had a few laughs, got some business done, didn't insult anybody, I didn't think." And he says, "Well, so-and-so called me and said, you're not welcome back in their office." I'm like, "Really?" He goes, "What did you do?" I said, "I went in, asked for the business, gave them some service, talk about this, that, and the other." And so my manager ultimately found out the reason he didn't want me coming back is because they weren't comfortable having an African-American man in their office for fear that I would be stealing something. 1980. Am I angry? Another bonehead that I'm not going to invite over for Thanksgiving dinner. It's not going to get a Christmas card or holiday cards. Plenty of other well-intentioned people out there. So you turn the other cheek and brush it off your shoulder and keep moving forward because there are so many other people on the other side that get it. My manager said to this guy, and this is what is important. He was a white guy, okay? He called him back and said, "If you can't do business with Ryan, we're done. You are not going to do business with us." And it was a touching moment that really kind of counterbalanced the bonehead that said, don't send Ryan because we're fearful he'll steal a woman's purse or accost somebody in the parking lot. I've never been arrested, never been accused of any crime. I'm not a violent guy. I've been in two fights in my life, most of them with my brothers. Okay? The other time, I'm entering an office for the first time, and I'm visiting with the general manager of that office, not Chubb, okay, because I got Chubb colleagues here. And I'm in the break room with the general manager. We're kind of chatting about stuff, you know, and I just kind of finished a house hunting trip, had on the standard corporate sort of like casual thing, the khakis and the polo shirt and my deck shoes or whatever I had on. So I'm just standing there kind of chatting away, and all of a sudden, exit stage or inner stage right, a woman coming up to me saying, oh, you must be here to serve as the vending machines. And then the general manager kind of like, yeah, he's like, holy moly, this is going to be ugly. He steps kind of like in between us and says, Marlene, I'd like you to meet our new manager for this particular division. And she kind of went like this. But then my orientation is to not overreact. I looked to my manager and said, hey, Bob, you know, I just don't do windows. My first day in the office, a beautiful handmade ceramic mug with all kinds of gourmet coffees and teas was in the middle of my desk, compliments of Marlene. But I had to understand that I was the first man of color in these environments. And if they did see men of color, they were either, you know, cleaning up and once the lights went off and everyone was rushing home, or they were coming in to do a service job to deliver this, that, or the other. But to come in and be on the professional staff was an anomaly. So to say you had to have thick skin and let things sort of roll off your shoulders, but also acknowledge that you heard what they said and that it wasn't going to affect how you were going to move forward. I'll give you another insight into me. It's through my dad. My dad is 87. And all of his early life as a kid, he wanted to be a pilot. Now, we're talking about 1920s, 1930s, 1940s. Okay? He wanted to fly planes. So, what does one do? You know, when you're wanting to fly planes, you join the military. First, he gets drafted into the Navy. That was just sort of the luck of the draw. But he knew they had planes. He made it abundantly clear that, hey, I would love, I got a passion for flying, I want to learn. They heard him, they nodded. And you fast forward 3 years, he was in the kitchen, kind of like relegated to doing that. Wasn't bitter, wasn't deterred. Once he'd done his tour duty in the Navy, he enlisted in the Air Force. Who would do that today? After getting smacked down like that and put in a place that is demeaning and well beneath your capacity. So he joins the Air Force. Wow, air. Well, they got planes everywhere. So I want to fly a plane, okay? And my dad, most elegant, articulate, bright, almost genius-like individual, and one of my heroes. You fast forward 3 years into a stint in the Air Force. He was a mechanic. He got close to the plane. Closer, but not in the cockpit. Gets out of the military, marries my mom, and starts having children. At the same time, he's working three jobs, and then working on planes at a local airport as a mechanic, gassing them up, getting them ready, and also with spare change in the midst of, you know, ultimately having six boys that consume more food that's in this room for every meal, taking flying lessons. You fast forward 3 years from that point of his first lesson. He was the head flight instructor at that airport. So when I'm having a bad day, when I'm having a setback or a speed bump, it pales in comparison. And I will tell you that my dad could have had a huge chip on his shoulder and said, every white person is a demon. I don't trust them. But guess what? Everyone that he taught to fly, they're white guys. So he could have been completely sort of like out there saying, no, you're not worthy, you're not going to pass. But he saw people as people. If they had the skills, that was easy. And I will tell you, to this day, he's got friends that are lifelong friends that admire him because of his persistence, his resiliency, his ability to rise above the crap. That's a real scientific term. So anyway, that's a little bit more about me than you probably thought you would hear. But it gives me the motivation to keep one foot in front of the other and not let little sort of speed bumps or potholes, shouldn't say potholes because we got far too many in New Jersey, but it gives me the motivation to not let stuff and people, individuals, stop you in your tracks. So it's an inspiring story for me. Some advice. I'll tell you that you need to know what kind of environment and culture works for you. And I'm not talking about ethnic culture. I'm not talking about, you know, whether it's, you know, indoor job, outdoor job. I'm talking about whatever organization you align yourself with. Understand what their values are, what they stand for, what they represent. Do they reflect your values? Do they reflect what's important to you? I mean, every organization is going to have the need, whether they're for-profit or not, to make money and do what they need to do. But if you're in an environment where you don't feel ethically or directionally or from a social responsibility perspective, it goes counter to who you are, you're not going to be ultimately happy. You're not going to do your best work. You're not going to put your all into it. So analyze the culture, but also look in the mirror and understand and be really, really brutally honest with yourself about what that matters to you from a culture perspective and environment. So having those priorities kind of hardwired, because I tell you, I made a few mistakes early on because I just didn't know. I didn't know to ask about culture. It's like, how much does it pay? How many weeks of vacation can I get? What are the benefits? But ask about the culture, okay? Because you work for whatever the organization is. You are a reflection of them and vice versa. So I can tell you, you know, working in the insurance business, you know, has its pluses and minuses. Early on, you know, after I graduated college and, you know, joined the insurance ranks, you know, you would go to the happy hours and people say, so what do you do? Well, I work in the insurance business. Next thing you know, they're like, check, please. And they're looking to hold onto their wallet for fear that you're going to fleece them or something and try and sell them something. But I know it's more than that. But that's one thing. Understand the culture. The other thing is, don't be afraid to get outside your comfort zone and fail. Take some risk, in particular early on. You know, the stakes are low, truly, because you're almost expected to make mistakes when you're entering the work world and you're at an entry level and you're working your way up. Make the mistakes, but don't make the same one over and over again. You've heard that before from your parents, I'm sure, okay? But learn from them. Those are learning opportunities. I never penalize anybody for doing something that stretches them, makes them uncomfortable, makes them feel as though they are kind of out of sorts, okay? But push yourself and see what your limitations are or aren't. The second thing, or third thing, I guess, is ask questions. Don't be afraid to say, I don't know. I've worked at Chubb for 30 years, and there isn't a day that doesn't go by where I shrug my shoulders. I said this to Gary. I just shrugged my shoulders and was like, I don't know. But you got to be willing to admit that human sort of trait that we all possess, that we don't know it all. Even though my 15-year-old says she knows it all, she'll quickly learn, I hope, for the sake of the sanity in my house. But don't be afraid to say you don't know. Ask for help if you need it. The thing that happens when you ask for help, if you ask someone's opinion that's in a higher position, guess what? They're going to have like diarrhea of the mouth. They're going to be just like flowing and gushing with stuff to say. But it gives you an insight into people that are in jobs that you might aspire to, how they think, how they process, how they approach issues and challenges. A couple of other things. Don't be afraid. Once again, I'm always about not being afraid. Don't be afraid to take on that really tough, unpopular assignment or job. Okay? And it could be a high-profile opportunity. So the risks are really, really high. And obviously the rewards are high too. But despite the fact that everyone around you knows that is a tough job with high risk, high wire, high visibility, it tells people that you're willing to step up and do things that everyone else really doesn't care to do but needs to be done. It enables you to add value in a way that the others that are around you as your peer group aren't willing to do. I will tell you, it's important to understand that everybody that shows up for a job kind of does the job, but what causes you to stand out and distinguish yourself? I did a job at Chubb that nobody wanted to do. It was unscripted. There was no roadmap. It was our toughest trading partner. In fact, some people think they're demonic. I won't say who they are. But they were the biggest pain in the butt of any of our... Yeah. Still are. It's in their DNA. It's part of their culture. But nobody wanted to take it. I raised my hand, but I will tell you that I wouldn't be in this job today, you know, running our fourth largest branch in the world. I wouldn't be in this job today if I had not taken that opportunity and made the most of it. I will tell you, that wasn't easy. There are days I go home and say, what the heck was I thinking? And then you got people that are relying upon you to lead them through, you know, the minefields, but you don't have a roadmap. But I will tell you, the invaluable experience and to be able to tell stories about what you learn from that experience sets you apart. And you learn things about yourself in terms of capacity, what your pain threshold is, and your ability to lead and communicate and get people bought into what is a difficult journey. Make sure I'm not missing anything here. Oh. Never let anybody dumb down the expectations of you. Let me repeat that. Never let anybody dumb down the expectations. Okay? Just like the guy that said, hey, we hired him because he can actually speak English. That's dumbing down the expectations. That's insulting. You want to be graded like anyone else. You don't want anyone to cut you a break, give you a second set of standards. Raise the bar high for yourself. Don't let anybody make you think you're not capable of doing the minimum. It's insulting. I told you I had most of this memorized, but I have to make sure I got a couple points I want to make sure I don't overlook. Okay, I mentioned this early. As you progress in whatever you do, make sure you take every opportunity to give back. You may be the first person hired, the newest person hired, but ultimately you fast forward, you're not the newest person anymore. There's a new group behind you. And then when you get to be in a job or an organization as long as I have, you value your career based on stuff like this. And I'm, you know, a few years out from retirement, but what I don't want people to say about me when I leave is, oh, yes, the New Jersey branch grew 3% consecutively for the last, 4 or 5 years and had a profit margin of 10 points. Really? That's what it's all about? No. I want them to say, here was a guy that cared about people, coached, mentored, listened to people, gave back to people to help them navigate a career and be the best person they can be. That's really what you want. So find people that do that to you, but be the one that initiates that, no matter what level you're at in an organization. Find ways to get comfortable and accustomed to giving back. Okay? That's my advice. That's more than you probably thought I would have because I'm an old guy. But I will tell you, there's what I consider a formula for success. How many people like pie? Okay. And how many people slice it up and want to get the biggest piece of the pie? It's okay. I mean, whatever is said in this room, stay in this room, okay? Although it's being recorded. Okay. There are three critical pieces of a pie from a career success perspective that I think you got to really understand. The P stands for performance. The I stands for image. And the E stands for exposure. Now, if you were to render a guess on which one of those pieces really are the most heavily weighted piece of those three that would assure you a successful career, what would that be? You said performance? Did I hear image? Image? Performance is probably about 10% of the weight. Image is about 30, and the remaining 60% is exposure. Now, let me kind of break down those three pieces. Doesn't mean that you don't perform, okay? Because if you don't perform at a high level, the other pieces aren't going to really matter because you're not going to have much of a career. But first, you got to nail the performance, meet the expectations, exceed them consistently. But beyond that, you can find your career kind of plateauing out because, hey, I come to work, I work hard to produce the results. But then you start to get a sense of, okay, I'm being held back because there's perceptions, the things that people think about me, how I am sort of represented in other circles. That's the image. It's not, how you dress. It's not, the color of your hair. It's really, what do you stand for? It's more things like, okay, Ryan's a guy that is collaborator, effective leader, is able to, balance things and solve problems, pretty steady, doesn't get too flustered. But that's your image. That's who you are, you know, through other people's observations. I learned that the hard way, you know, because I was, you know, in this business not really knowing the whole sort of image thing was important. I thought if I showed up, I wasn't late, you know, didn't miss meetings, got the results, kept my head down, I'm going to kill it. To a certain extent, you will. I mean, that's like the price of admission to the career derby. I mean, that's like the basic price of admission. Because everybody around you, for the most part, is going to perform because they don't want to lose their job unless they don't like what they're doing. So that's a given. Do that. So the image part, I ask a lot of people when they go on job interviews within the organization. And I'm already assuming they're qualified to do the job. But more of my question is around, what do you think people are going to say about you when the hiring manager calls me, calls someone you work with, calls your peers? Because you know they will do that. They'll put together a collage of who you are through snapshots of other people's perception of who you are. Whether you believe the perception or not is somewhat irrelevant, because that becomes the reality that you have to overcome if you don't like the perception. So I encourage people to know and have a good feeling about what will people say about you. I ask my manager all the time, it's like, so Peter, when you talk to Jerry, what do you tell him about me? It's not an uncomfortable conversation. I'm not trying to put him on the spot. But I'm just trying to check down on, okay, is the narrative or the script that's out there about me the script that I would want to write versus the script being written by other people? And trust me, people will write a script for you. Okay? So understand what that narrative is about you. And you can truly control that. But be aware that that's an important piece. The last piece is the exposure part. That's who you know and who knows you. And it's beyond just, you know, oh, I bumped into Gary in the hallway and said hello. You know, have they seen you in action? Have they seen you interact with people? Have you sat down with them and talked to them about what you're working on? Some people call that, you know, networking. Some people call it politicking. Once again, it's 60% of career success formula, at least my opinion. Because what ends up happening, if there's a photo finish in a contest between candidate A, candidate B, they both are knocking it out of the park from a performance standpoint, they both have a pretty good image, and then candidate B has exposure. And he's got people that have been his mentor or her mentor. But it's beyond that. They're also willing to pick up the phone and advocate for candidate B. That's a reality. And it's not as though candidate B called up, you know, their mentor and said, hey, can you call so-and-so and put in a good word for me? Although that's not at all outside the boundaries to do that. But someone that is willing to put their reputation on the line for you to say, I recommend, I suggest, I think you would be making a great mistake if you don't hire Ryan. So the advocacy comes through the exposure. And that's not going to, it's not going to be credible unless you've not had any kind of interaction, conversation about what you're working on with those individuals. I can't tell you how much time I spend picking up the phone and calling on other people's behalf that I work with that are vying for a job within the organization. So separate mentors from advocates. Mentors, they may not be the person that ultimately picks up the phone and says, yeah, I'd vouch for you, but they're willing to give you coaching and insights. But you want to make sure you convert that mentor relationship to someone that is willing to be a sponsor or an advocate for you. Because that makes the biggest difference in any environment, whether it's insurance, whether you're trying to, you know, work in non-for-profit or whatever. Okay? Any questions because that's all I got. I do have more, but I want to make sure we have some time for Q&A. But remember the pie, and the biggest piece of the pie is what? Absolutely. But don't forget about doing the job, okay? Yes.
So you have to really have a strong sense of yourself that you're writing your own narrative and someone else has their narrative about you and you come together and it's like off.
Yep.
It doesn't drive. So how do you get to that place? And for our students who are in leadership positions or aspiring, so your narrative is I'm ready to be the president of SGA.
Yep.
So now how do you communicate that narrative?
Yep. You, I'm all about facts. Okay?
Would you paraphrase the question for the podcast?
So my question was, you have to really be grounded and know who you are and be a strong person to write your own narrative and communicate that to others, especially if other people already have a narrative about you. So how do you override their narrative?
How's that work for you? Okay. I'm all about proof and facts. I mean, and I think the self-awareness and looking in the mirror at yourself and saying, okay, let me be perfectly clear on what the requirements are of that job and what they're looking for. So you, one, have to know exactly what it is those jobs are requiring and making sure that you can give tangible evidence that you possess the requisite skills through stories and, more powerfully, through other people that have seen you in those roles. So you almost have to sort of figure out who are the people besides myself, because I think people do want to attack the perception themselves. But I think it's more powerful when you have kind of a network of people kind of reiterating the same thing that you believe about yourself to be true and speaking on your behalf. So it's almost as if you have to sort of develop kind of a group of lobbyists on your behalf, and that's kind of what I'm saying, because it's much more powerful to have a third person or another person validate what you told the hiring manager. So you have to kind of work that network. Make sense? Okay. Who else has a question? Oh, I'm going to give you the microphone. Just don't sing, okay?
So your journey from being an art student to a corporate American, do you feel like you lost part of yourself in that process?
Absolutely not. I think I've gained an additive because I still enjoy music, art. I dabble at home with my daughters. And so when I finally bring down, the curtain on my career, I'm going to rev up, the art thing a lot more. So no, I've expanded myself, and I created a dimension in myself that I didn't think was even possible. But I will tell you, I met some of the most incredible people in this journey that have, shared interests as well. So because I have a vocation or a career in the insurance business doesn't mean that I've kind of lopped off all big parts of me. And that's a real good lesson, Don't ever be identified by your career. I mean, just never let that be how you're sort of portrayed. And I kind of fast forward to, my eulogy. I don't want to be graphic here, but I'm in the casket. And, you're listening to people talk about who you are. The last thing you want them to say, so you had a really rich career in the insurance business. Never missed a day of work, never took vacation. Boy, he was a hard worker. Like, bag that. No, I want them to say, great person, good husband, friend, had varied interest, but being identified as a insurance executive is not how I want to be portrayed when I'm being lowered into the ground. Okay? Seriously, I don't know if they get morbid here, but that's kind of how I view things. And you got to do the same thing for yourself. How do you want to be remembered? So, the art thing is, it's not going to ever die. It's genetically based. Okay? Oh.
How do you keep yourself from being affected by people's negative perceptions of you?
A lot of times I use humor. It's probably the ultimate thing that disarms situations. Just like the woman that said, hey, you know, you must be here to, you know, do the vending machine. I was like, I just don't do windows. So I always look for something to kind of, you know, take the edge off of the situation. And then it kind of gives me an insight in terms of their orientation. So I know a lot of people, so it's not as though I'm like, you know, hungry for another friend. But if there's someone that I have to deal with on a regular basis, I have to talk to them very frankly about, you know, how we're going to operate, what the ground rules are, and what the expectations. And that you have to have that conversation. If there is someone that you're working for, working with, but there's someone that's on the peripheral that's not going to really impact your day-to-day, you find a way to shrug it off, at least for me, through humor, and chalk it up to someone's lack of awareness. And I can't change ignorance. You got a question?
I know in this room we have a lot of, you know, student leaders, and we also have a lot of aspiring student leaders. And if you just had like one tip, you know, just to like help us get through, you know, the good and even the tough, because there is a lot of tough, you know, being a leader just in general. If you just have one tip to give everybody here, what would be your best one?
Wow, let me think about that. Yeah, the pressure's on. Yeah. I think you have to be authentic. If you're in a situation where it's death-defying, it's challenging, et cetera, there's a part of you that doesn't want the rank and file to see you sweat. But it's okay to be authentic and to allow people to see how human you really are, okay? I think a lot of times leaders feel like they've got to have this perfect aura, that nothing ever phases them, that they have all the answers. But be true, be authentic, and your failings, if you want to call them that, your inability to get the right answer is overcome, because people will see that here's a person that I can trust. And if you don't have the trust of people around you, your leadership is going to go nowhere. And you only can get that kind of trust by being authentic and being truthful about who you are. That's it. How'd I do? Okay. That was a planted question. It was not. Question back there.
Mm-hmm. That I want her to work with.
Okay.
What would you see? Like, could be anything. Could be something that she could say or something that she could show. Like, what?
Have you applied for a job at Chubb? Oh, okay. Just want to make sure you're not in the queue right now. What I would look for are two things. One, the ability to start and finish stuff. And then, secondly, walk me through kind of the, I mean, I'm like a 100,000-mile tire that's got like, you know, 250,000 miles on it, okay? So I'm looking for people that have had not just academic but life's experiences that have been challenging, that shows how resilient they are, how they adapt, how they figure it out, and how they persevere. So perseverance and being adaptable and being able to overcome challenges, at the same time, complete things. Two powerful things. I mean, you can have like the best resume. I've got a, you know, 3.8, was it me? You're involved in all these different things, and everything goes along perfectly. And if I can't hear a story from you where, and you ask people questions. So tell me about your biggest accomplishment. Oh, God, the list is like
How many hours do you have? I'm so wonderful. And then you ask them, so tell me about something that didn't go too well. They're kind of going, I don't know. It's like, come on. Yeah, something didn't go exactly according to plan. To me, that's where the richness is in terms of getting a sense of the character of that individual, how they're wired, how they manage uncertainty. Because I tell you, my job is not linear. I can't tell you on a given day what I'm going to be encountering. I know what day it is, but I don't know how it's going to get filled up, truly. And if I'm not resilient, if I can't bob and weave and kind of figure it out, but at the same time keep moving forward, I'm not going to be successful. So I look for those qualities in people. I'm not a psychologist either. What else you got? This is fun. Okay. Right now is the time I felt like I should drop the mic. Thank you so much.
Let's get another round of applause, Mr. Ryan Wassman. Thank you so much. We appreciate it. So nice to see all of you. As for those of you who don't know me, my name is Conrad Colon. I'm the Executive Vice President of Student Government. I just want to thank all of you for coming out to our first TD Bank Leadership Series of the spring semester. This series, of course, isn't possible without help from TD Bank, America's most convenient bank, along with help from Phi Theta Kappa, and specifically their VP of Leadership and Service, Ashley Gaffkinetti. So let's give her a round of applause. Also, we have several representatives from the RVCC Foundation, specifically Ronnie Weil, and they really deserve their help with all of this because they help us with all of the planning. And, of course, Gary, yes. Thank you, Gary. I appreciate it. And thank you for your connections as well. It's fantastic to see all of you here and really take some of these lessons, and I hope you really do leave with something from this. Now, I know we all have humble beginnings, and we're here at RV trying to better ourselves, and I hope you take the lessons that we've talked about, that Ryan has shared with us today, and really move forward and apply them to your lives. I want to invite you all out to our next leadership series, which will be March 26th, which we'll be bringing back our annual Women's in Business panel to celebrate Women's History Month, so I hope to see you all there. And on March 5th, which is coming up right around the corner, I invite you all out to welcome Katie Myler, one of Time's Persons of the Year, to campus. And she'll be here during College Hour in the Conference Center to celebrate the kickoff to the More Than Me campaign here on campus. So I thank you all for your time and consideration. Remember to fill out a card for your student engagement transcripts in the back. All the information is there, and we hope to see you all very soon. Thank you so much. And we have one more thing. We have a gift for our wonderful speaker. So if you could give him another round of applause. Just a little something from us in the foundation. Yes, it's a gift from the foundation, and then we have a gift from us as well. So thank you so much for coming. We truly appreciate it.
You're welcome. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much. One more time, Mr. Ryan Wassman. Thank you. Enjoy the rest of your day, everyone.